When I was 19 years old, I tried to sell all my things. I had just heard this very gospel, and I felt convicted. My roommate was sitting next to me when we heard the fiery sermon that followed, and she felt equally motivated. So we set to work. We began cataloging the saleable items in our small dorm room and researching how we might go about selling them. We really worked at this. We looked hard at how we could make this happen. And we worked on it for a while, but ultimately the whole endeavor fell flat. As it turned out, we did not own things that were worth anything to anyone. Selling all your belongings and giving the money to the poor was more complicated than we had expected. At 19, we believed that Jesus really meant what he said to this rich man. Our priest at the time had spent much of his life working in El Salvador, and he had first-hand experience with what a preferential option for the poor might look like. He helped us to see how our having was actually connected directly to someone else not having. We wanted to respond. A lot has changed for me in the intervening years. I have far more belongings now, some of them actually worth something. So much that comes with having kids and with the responsibility that I carry for them. And if I'm really honest, I also just have more. I think that I need more than I did back then. But as I've been wrestling with this passage, I have to confess that I believe that Jesus really did mean what he said here. There's no question that Jesus often speaks in metaphor and sometimes even hyperbole. Right? We have passages like the one we had a few weeks ago where Jesus teaches that if our different body parts cause us to stumble, we should cut them off. I cannot believe that the one who came to heal us, who came to offer abundant life, actually desired more suffering and maimed people. The teaching was arresting. It caught our attention, and it was a metaphor. Oh, how tempting it is to cast this passage into that same category. He's exaggerating. Creature comforts are delightful, right? Just toss a couple bucks towards some noble cause now and again. Call it good. He can't possibly mean all our belongings. Can he? You know, as in everything? I don't like it. But I actually think he does mean it. Listen to this in concert with his other teachings, with these verses come to take on a new life. We hear that Jesus has been anointed to bring good news to the poor. He lifts up the widow who gives her one coin over and against those who give a bit out of their abundance. He lauds those who care for the least of these, the naked and the hungry. His mission lies with the poor, and he calls us to actively participate in this good news. Even if we might believe that we really are called to live with far less and to share our wealth far more generously, it is so easy to throw up all those many excellent excuses, right? Crafting bulletproof rationales for why this doesn't actually apply. At least not to me. Not here, not now. If you need some excuses, though, I'm glad to share. I have plenty of them. Maybe it's that kids are expensive, right? We've got childcare and lessons and sports and even just all the good food they eat. It adds up, right? Or maybe it's that really I should be saving more so that I can take better care of these kids, or so that I won't be a burden on someone else down the line. Or, if I were to get really honest with you, there is that questionable but quite visceral excuse. I like nice things. I enjoy good chocolate and fresh-cut flowers and exciting trips and eating my way around this amazing neighborhood. And not one of these things is inherently bad. I can say that I'm consuming less than the next guy, so... But there's always a next guy. No matter our level of wealth. And it is always, always a choice, a picking this over that, a choosing me and my desires over someone else. Those are some of my rationales. Here's my second confession for the morning. When I can't do the whole thing, it is tempting to do nothing at all. It's not feasible for me to sell all my things and give the money to the poor, right? That would be an irresponsible parenting move, and Berkeley doesn't need more unhoused people. And it becomes very easy to do nothing and to continue in this totally different direction. I think Jesus is actually asking this rich man to give up everything. I think he asks this generosity of us as well. But as he speaks, he's looking this man right in the eye, seeing him and loving him. And even more than the money, Jesus is asking that he follow. He wants us to choose that trajectory, the one of following him. Even if we can't drop everything and do the whole thing right now, we are called to move in that direction. We're called to ask ourselves what the beginning of that way could be. What's the next move we can take, even if the whole vision is still a long way off? How can we begin to follow right now? Responding to this call is a risk. Jesus is not inviting us to follow him somewhere lovely and simple and endlessly pleasant. He's going to Jerusalem. He's on his way to the cross. Following him is inherently dangerous. It upends our carefully planned lives. It demands far more of us than we can imagine. But that's the call, to size up the risk and then still step out, step forward, to follow him. To be clear, outside of that failed attempt back in college, I have not considered really selling all my things and giving the money to the poor. I recognize my need to practice deeper generosity, and I see the way my material wealth prevents me from entering the kingdom of God here and now. And still, I haven't given it all up. But I have taken some risks. When we moved back here to Berkeley 4 years ago, Jesse and I decided with some real trepidation that we would try to tithe. As in, literally, give 10% of my salary back to the church. It terrified me. Only 1 year earlier, we had been depending on state assistance to get by. It seemed like a foolish thing to do, like we should just be saving as much as we could, or maybe just enjoying not having to scrimp so much. But there was this nagging call I heard to reach, to try, to take the risk. Now, as an aside, to be clear, Jesus is not talking in this passage about giving money to the church, but to the poor. These are different, related, but they're different. I share it just because it's one way that I have tried to practice generosity. And that first time, I would have put our odds at maybe 50-50. Of having to back out of the pledge halfway through the year, or at the very least, dial it way back the next time around. Tithing stretched me. It made me think about what I actually needed, what I wanted, how I wanted to share. And to my surprise, we have continued tithing. And here's the thing. It doesn't feel so hard now. It feels like a way of life, which probably means that it's also time to ask those hard questions again, to really listen for the call again, to discern anew how we are led to be generous. I don't share this to boast, but because I think it's really important that we actually talk about money honestly and vulnerably and together. I know that I need the body's collective wisdom and accountability. We need to talk with each other about stretching, talk about being scared and trying the risk anyway. So let's really do it. With a friend or a spouse, with your kids or with neighbors, shoot, even with a stranger sitting next to you in the pew. Let's dig in. What are the ways we are called to do something, even when we can't do it all just yet? How are we called to follow, looking towards how we hope to practice generosity in 3 or 10 or 20 years? How do we want to live now and then? Most of us can't leap to that whole vision right now. But it's time to bury the excuses, to break down the easy rationales, and step out. Together, we can listen to that call and step closer to following Jesus right now.